Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. Well, train and bus riders are still remembering the rate hikes and service cuts from last summer. Unfortunately, that appears to have been a little too late. The T is still on the red, maybe to nobody's surprise, and no plan has been approved yet, we should say, to handle. We heard the governor, you know, proposing some solutions in his budget. But joining me now is former Massachusetts State Secretary of Transportation James Aloisi. He's been writing about transportation for Commonwealth Magazine. Jim, welcome. You've got some answers, as I promised to our listeners.
Well, I try to come up with some constructive solutions, Emily. I think that these are always difficult issues because it requires people to dig deep into their pockets, and no one likes to do that. I don't like to do that. I'm sure you don't. But the reality is, as you pointed out, we keep taking small incremental baby steps. And they don't work. And, you know, the definition of insanity is you repeat the same behavior often and think it's going to get a different result. Hopefully now we're in a period where people have recognized that it is generationally not responsible to continue to do that and that we need to do some bold and significant steps to correct the chronic underfunding of our
transportation system. What did you think of the governor's budget proposals?
Well, I think it's an interesting proposal. I think it... I have supported the governor in, obviously, since 2009, in an effort to get net new revenue into the system. I have said very vocally that I think it is better to take those revenues out of the transportation sector. So I have said I think we need to have a pilot VMT program in Massachusetts.
What's a VMT?
VMT stands for Vehicle Miles Traveled. It's a it's a way of raising revenue where you charge people by exactly how much they use, by how much they drive. So you charge them 2 cents a mile or a penny a mile.
And how do you do that? On a gas?
You do that. It's not a gas tax. It's a pure user fee. And you would do that by technology. We have technology systems now that are available that can do this and can do it in a way that protects privacy so we don't care where you started and where you ended. We don't keep origin and destination data. We just care
about
how many
motor
miles.
Motor vehicles, though.
Motor vehicles.
Okay.
I mean, the reality is we haven't raised the gas tax since 1991. The governor's own report indicated, which is a really good report. People should go online at MassDOT. The report that the administration put out is very thorough. And I think they point out that the buying power of the gas tax, which is 21 cents, is really equivalent to 12 cents because it hasn't adjusted for inflation since 1991. We need to replace that, and we need to replace it with a reliable, steady source of revenue.
How would you tax people on this VMT, vehicle mileage? What is it?
Vehicle miles traveled.
So if I did 12,000 miles a year, how would I get that bill?
So you could get that bill in any number of ways. You know, it could be a monthly bill. It could be an annual bill when you bring your car into the registry for inspection. It could be done, because it's technology-based, it could be done in a very cost-effective and efficient manner.
So, but what if 10,000 of those miles are in New York State? I mean...
Well, then you won't pay the fee.
No, but how would you know?
Oh, you wouldn't... The technology enables... It would be... You wouldn't be charging people, for example, as they went out of their driveway and drove down Main Street. You'd just be charging people for the interstate system state highway system, and you'd have equipment there that would track people's miles, not their locations, but their miles. Mm. They've done this in Oregon. They're testing it in Minnesota. Mm. I think if you see what's happening nationally, you've got places like Virginia, where the governor of Virginia is in favor of abolishing the gas tax entirely and moving to a sales tax. You've got states like Kansas, where the governor of Kansas is eliminating the income tax altogether and using other sources. And here in Massachusetts, you've got the governor putting together his own plan, which is a hybrid of income tax and lowering the sales tax. I think people in the legislature now need to confront the reality that something bold has to take place. And I'm hoping that part of the mix will recognize that we have to be fair to all users. You know, we've been raising T fares five times since 1991, mm-hmm. and we've left the motorist untouched. So if you're a secretary...
In terms of tolls, you mean?
In terms of gas tax hasn't gone up. Mm-hmm. If you're a secretary making $55,000 a year and you live in the suburbs and you take commuter rail in, what you're faced with is you just got an increase in your T fare and you might get an income tax increase, but a person who drives in isn't going to have a gas tax increase. I think we need to have some balance there. I think we need to recognize the automobile's not going away. We all drive cars. I do. But we need to balance the playing field. We need to enhance our public transportation system in a way that is really significant. And that's why I think the governor was so correct in pointing out not just the current needs, but the needs to grow the economy with public transportation by extending the Green Line out, by looking at the inland route and rail, and he didn't mention this, but by extending the Blue Line to Lynn. There are expansion programs that are necessary, I think, to sustain the kind of jobs growth and economic development that we want to have in Massachusetts.
What about the problems, though, of the basic infrastructure? I don't ride the T. I just take people's word for it.
Well, you should try it with me sometime.
All right, I will. But, you know, just this, that the stuff is old. I mean, it's an antique city. I mean, part of that is charming. But what about the, no, seriously. But what about that? I mean, you can start over. I mean, they should have done it when they did the big dig, but they didn't. So
no, I mean, it's not about starting over. It's about providing enough funding for significant state of good repair issues. So, again, if you look at the governor's plan, they're talking about new equipment for the Orange Line and the Red Line, which is very expensive but very critical. You know, sadly, we have a system that when it was built in the early part of the 20th century, it wasn't built in a way that we would build a brand new system today. So the tracks on the Blue Line don't match the Orange Line. They don't match the Red Line. You have to have different equipment. Obviously, the Green Line's different. All of these things are costly and add up. These tunnels were built in a day well before the big dig, so the technology was different. We need to play catch-up. But, you know, they do this in London, and they do this in other places that are as old or older than Boston. And the question really is about finding the will to understand how significant it is. What I said in Commonwealth Magazine, anybody who says they haven't taken the T to a Patriots game or a Red Sox game or to Mass General or to BC or BU, there aren't that many. You know, these are the drivers of jobs in our community. And we can't let the T fail. But more than that, we really have to let it rise to a level where people enjoy taking it again.
Hmm. So how are you going to do that?
Well, I think they're doing that. You know, the T has been doing some very, I think, compelling innovations around
apps and that kind of thing.
Apps and wait time. I think these are useful. These are rider friendly, and they create an atmosphere of better information, which is critical for people in terms of how they view their mobility. So I think they're making those steps. I think that the kind of funding, though, that you need to really bring a new fleet of equipment in and the kind of funding that you need to really transform the signaling system is in the millions and millions of dollars. And we need to figure out a way structurally to bring that money in.
I mean, isn't it fair to say, though, that the T is never going to make money?
At best, it's
going to be a break-even, but it's never going to be a revenue producer.
Since it was first created in the early 20th century, it's never made money. It's not the kind of thing that makes money. It's a public service. And there's a good reason for that. And, in many places in Boston, it's the equivalent sometimes of the yellow school bus. It's how seniors get to places. It's how students get around. If we value the institutions that I've talked about, places like Emerson College, places like BC and BU, and the hospitals that we have, most people get there on public transportation. And so they're not just vital for people, they're vital for jobs creation and jobs growth.
So the whole thing about raising fares, though, I mean, you're not taking that off the table either.
Well, I don't think, frankly, I think we've raised fares, I personally think we've raised them five times since 1991, and I think that's enough for now. I think you have to have fares that are fair and balanced. But they have to be set in a way that doesn't discriminate against the user of public transportation as against the driver of the automobile. And we need to recognize the impact of automobiles and fossil fuels in our society. I mean, I don't think this is a difficult conversation to have if it's had with the facts in mind and with the sense of fairness and balance in mind. But we just really need to rethink how we have approached this. I mean, I'm not gaga over the gas tax, but I do think it's a way to establish some fairness. The reality is our cars are becoming more hybrid, more fuel efficient. The gas tax is a dinosaur. We need to find alternatives, which is why I've been so vocal about VMT, because I do think...
And what states has this actually worked in?
Well, Oregon has had a massive pilot program there, which is kind of the national model, and I think they're doing something in Minnesota. It's something that is admittedly new, and because it's new, it's controversial. People are worried about privacy. I think it is not an issue here because, as I said earlier, you don't have to keep origin and destination data.
And people already know from their transponders or going in on and off the Mass Pike. They take a picture of your license plate every time. It's not a mystery where people
it's
are.
It's not. And I, you know, if you have an iPhone or an Android, you have a sensor on you. Mm-hmm. And so the idea, our ideas of privacy and reasonableness about privacy, I think in the 21st century have changed, and people need to catch up to that.
Well, people are still very, very paranoid about that. So in states that actually have this thing, has it worked? I mean, do they?
It's worked. The Oregon has been the leader, and in the pilot program that they had there, it worked quite well. And as I understand what they did in Oregon, you didn't pay the gas tax, so it was you basically got the gas tax for free, and at the state level, and you used in that circumstance it was a GPS enabled system mm-hmm. to track your miles. And I think people are looking for what is the way to have a pure user fee, where it's really what you use is what you pay for. If you think about the power of technology, I can charge someone, say I live in North Adams and I work in Pittsfield, I have to drive a longer distance because I'm in the Berkshires. I can charge you a base fee. But if I have to travel past 495 or past 128, I can charge you the base fee plus an increment because you're using a more congested road, supply and demand. And so all of the talk over the years about things like congestion pricing, you can actually do with the technology-driven system that creates fairness across the Commonwealth.
Well, what about that? Why not treat it more like the school tax, where it doesn't matter whether you have a car on the road or a student in the system? You're going to pay one way or another.
Right.
This way, you would only pay if you had a car.
Well, you would pay the VMT only if you had a car.
I know.
You would still pay your MBTA fare if you used the T.
What if you didn't use the T and you didn't have a car? You're just somebody who, you know, gets around other ways. I mean, everybody have to pay for it?
Well, I think there's an argument to say that everyone should have to pay some fundamental amount, just like we pay some fundamental amount for education and
healthcare.
Right,
exactly.
And I don't object to that, but I think that base amount, whatever that is never going to be a strong enough fiscal platform to rebuild your transportation network. You need to get substantial net new revenues. If you look at the 2007 report of the Transportation Finance Commission, you'll see it there, the significant focus on VMT as a solution to our future problems.
So it's already been proposed. Why don't we get with it?
Well,
I mean, come on.
I tried to do this in 2009. I think if you look at, again, the report that the governor's office put out on MassDOT, mm-hmm. it's certainly listed there as one of the solutions. So I think people want to have the conversation. I think the question is, will the legislature want to also engage in that conversation with the governor and see what happens?
I mean, we're still backwoods in terms of things like, easy pass transponders and that kind of thing. It always just astounds me day in and day out how many people don't have that.
Well,
especially on the weekends. Nobody on the weekend has one.
It astounds me. It's also true for a lot of cabs who don't have one. And, you know, I've been in the job I have now, I travel sometimes globally, and you see what people are doing in places across the globe, in the Middle East, in Europe, in Asia. And it puts us to shame. I mean, people have said this, you know, in other contexts in terms of airports. I think our airport is one of the better ones. But in terms of public transportation systems and the use of technology, you know, if you go to Singapore, you would be embarrassed to see how they have taken technology and make it drive their transportation system and beyond. So the power is there. Mm-hmm. In the state where, you know, we've got MIT and Harvard and BC and BU and all these great colleges, it seems to me we should and will be at the forefront of figuring out how to leverage this technology for our own benefit.
What kind of impact, for instance, in Singapore does their transportation system have on the economy? I mean, is that a burden to them too? Or is it totally state subsidized? How does it work?
Yeah, it's I mean, you pay for it.
Everybody pays for it.
But you know, Singapore's kind of a benevolent dictatorship, so you can do. Yeah. You don't have to have 10 meetings in the North
End
to figure out what you need to do.
Exactly. I'm wondering if it's totally state subsidized or I mean,
no, it's a combination. It's a combination, and you know, but again, you go to London, use the Oyster card. Yeah. You know, this is this multi-purpose contact card, and I think that technology can bring us real value in the way in which it's beyond mobility. We just have to figure out how to leverage it and how to cross that that sort of mental barrier between the way in which we do things, which is still 20th century, and the way in which we need to do things.
You got some other ideas here, parking assessments against parking lots along the T. How would that work?
Well, the parking assessment was actually picked up by Governing Magazine. They were intrigued by the idea. The notion there is twofold. One, you recognize the carbon impact of driving, and you say, look, if you're driving and you're parking in a non-residential spot in a parking lot, there's a fee associated with
it. There already is, though.
There's a carbon assessment fee. I'm not talking about the fee for parking. I'm talking about a carbon assessment
fee. Oh, I see. In addition to the fee for parking.
Correct.
A carbon assessment fee.
Now, think about that fee. My concept is that fee is a dedicated revenue source that can be used in that community. So let's take Cambridge as an example. If Cambridge assessed a $2 a day carbon assessment fee on non-residential parking, it would be able to use those funds with local control on bike and ped and public transit connections, the kinds of things that are typically underfunded and people are looking for ways to raise revenues on. So my idea is both to create a little bit more local control and to create a revenue source that's tied to the automobile's impact on the environment and uses that money exclusively for projects that could be development projects or other projects that get people onto different modes.
All right, here's another idea of yours. Relieve the MBTA of the big dig. What do you mean by that?
Of the debt.
Of the debt.
The big dig debt.
Well, how? Who do you push it onto?
Well, there's no one else to push it onto but the Commonwealth. But I think
it's a conversation
that needs to take place, exactly. And, you know, the MBTA, when they changed the funding formula to go into so-called forward funding, the slate was not clean. There was debt as of day one. And I think if you look at the kind of money that the T has to spend out every year in debt service, you realize why it becomes such an unsustainable system. So, again, I'm not saying these are easy solutions. They're not. They all require significant commitments of funding. One of the things that the governor's proposal does that we tried to do in 2009 that I'm very supportive of is he's trying to take us off this really bad, bad system that we inherited where you're paying highway department employees with a credit card, basically. You're paying them with capital dollars, with borrowed money. That's a really crazy way to do this. But it's a way to mask the fact that you don't have the cash flow to pay people. Mm-hmm. We're going to move, if the governor's proposal is passed, which I hope it is, we'll move out of that and we'll be able to be more transparent with people. This is a big issue. We have masked the problem for the people in Massachusetts because they've seen bridges repaired, they've seen projects move forward, and they imagine, well, there must be money, or else how could this work be done? We're up to our capacity in borrowing, and it's time to figure out how to get out of that cycle and into a cycle of better cash flow.
Talking to former Transportation Secretary James Aloisi. By the way, going back to that vehicle mileage VMT program, that would also get rid of the tolls, or potentially, right? I mean, because tolls is really an antiquated system. That is just bizarro. Think about that all the time. The people are backed up, especially on holiday weekends.
It would replace the tolls. And what we said in the 2007 Transportation Finance Commission report, which again is online, people can look at it, the average user of the turnpike, when compared with what they were paying on tolls versus VMT, would actually pay less using VMT. So VMT, I think, is where tolls are not a pure user fee because of the way in which tolls are set. VMT is that pure user fee, and it's very transparent. I think most people can embrace a revenue production system that is completely transparent to them, where they know what they're paying, they know where it's going, and it makes sense and it's logical. Mm-hmm. I think where you trip up on ourselves is when we create systems of revenue generation that are more complicated, that are not as transparent, and people then don't trust the system.
Yeah.
So
this sounds good.
You know,
I'll sign up for this.
See, I'm hoping we can have a pilot program where 200, 300 people like you and me would raise our hand we'll do it, and let's try it out, and let's prove to people
I spend a fortune every day on tolls because I just go back and forth from Boston. And I can't take transportation to this office. There is no way to do it.
Yes.
It's a six-mile ride to my home from here. And in order to take public transportation, I'd have to go you know, take a bus into town, then back out, and it would take me 45 minutes or longer.
I think Fred Salvucci is down the street. He should show you how to do it by bus. But
does
it would take
it?
You a while. Oh, he always is on. He's on the bus and train
painful.
Every day.
I don't have an hour. Chelsea says an hour. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
You know, that is not a good use of my time. You know, getting in my car, it's crazy. I spend, you know, what is it, $5 a day on tolls or whatever it is. But
yeah, well, this is where, again, is into the future, you can have, you know, Cisco in San Francisco piloted what they called the smart bus, where the bus was set up to enable people to actually do work on the bus using their technology. So we're moving into a new era, and I think, though, we've got to begin the process of transforming our system from one that is driven by fossil fuels to one that's driven by technology. And this is a good time to start.
All right. Sounds good. Former Transportation Secretary James Aloisi with those words of wisdom about how to fix our transportation system. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Emily.
Great. Always good to have you. And Callie Crossley is back. What do you got up next?
Speaking of keeping those trains running on time, I was told by listening to a good pal of ours, John Keller, this morning, who said Cowan kept those trains running on time for Governor Patrick. So we're going to be talking about what the insiders have to say about Mo Cowan.
Okay. Who you got?
Adam Riley down there.
Oh, good.
Collecting
good.
All the
good.
Info. All right. I'm Callie Crossley.
I'm Emily Rooney, and this is Boston Public Radio.